A record number of women are running for office this year, and our next guest just released a new novel that looks at the inside of a campaign and what it's like to be one of those women. I'm Jill Nadeau, filling in for Larry Mueller. Thank you for joining us on the Ideas Network. Joe Piazza is back with us. She's an award-winning journalist and editor and the author of a number of books, including The Knockoff and How to Be Married. Her new book is called Charlotte Walsh Likes to Win, a novel. Do you think women candidates are treated differently than men? Do you think they should be? Have you run for office? What was your experience like? Well, we'd like to hear from you. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Joe Piazza, hello.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me, Jill.
You bet. Thanks for coming back on again. You know, last time you were with us, which was like April of last year, I think, you were publicizing your book, How to Be Married. And here we are a little more than a year later. And not only do you have a new novel out, but you're a new mom.
I have a new novel and a new baby. Yeah,
what were you thinking?
I don't know. I don't even know how I wrote this novel. The whole thing is kind of a blur. I sent in the first draft while I was in labor.
Oh, no. You are a multitasker.
I was bouncing up and down on that yoga ball they tell you to bounce up and down on. But I think that it really helped inform the novel because it gave me this new perspective on what it's like to be a working mom. And if Charlotte Walsh is anything, I mean, she's a tech executive running for Senate, but she's also a mother. And one of the things I've learned from candidates is just how hard it is to balance being a mom on the campaign trail.
I can't imagine. And this book is certainly like timely. When did you actually start writing it?
So I started writing this right before, actually, and people are surprised that I did it before the election, but right before the election in 2016, was when I had the idea for it. And I was about a month pregnant then, and it really solidified for me after the election. And
Sure. That's
when all of these organizations that were helping women run, just their websites were breaking down. They were starting to get so many queries from women saying, I have to run for office right now, on both sides of the aisle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we're seeing a record number of women candidates out there. But the reason I wanted to write the book is that I think the media treats women candidates unfairly a lot of times. I think we hold women to these different standards. We're constantly discussing their outfits and their hair, asking them questions about how they can be good mothers, who's taking care of their kids, what do their husbands think about their policy issues. And I thought it was time to have a very frank discussion about that in fiction. And
yes.
I could have done it in nonfiction. I write nonfiction books too, but I think fiction has such a power to influence people in a different way. The nonfiction. We relate to characters, we internalize characters, we keep them with us in a very unique way, and I think that Hollywood and popular fiction have failed women by not showing enough women who can lead.
You're true. I mean, when's the last time you saw a movie with a woman who was a leader, right?
You don't.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And when you do see women in office in movies and TVs, and think really hard about this for a sec, they're either kind of shrewish, shrill, unfriendly, and I love the show Veep, but they portray her as an idiot.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we haven't seen strong, competent, ambitious women, and that was one of the reasons I wanted to write Charlotte, and now one of the reasons why I'm spinning all of my wheels in Hollywood to try to have it turned into a TV show.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, because I could totally, if not a full TV show, at least a short TV series or something.
Well, we all love those limited series.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. I have a call as soon as I get off the phone with you, which I actually postponed for this interview.
Well, thank you.
with a studio. And so I've been back and forth between here and L.A.
Okay.
The past 3 months working out the details. So hopefully we're going to get Charlotte Walsh on the screen, big or small.
Oh, that would be wonderful. We'll send good thoughts for you out to L.A. Well, before we go any further, why don't you tell us what the plot is of this book?
Yeah, of course. So Charlotte Walsh grew up in working class, working poor, really, northeastern Pennsylvania, and then was very successful as a tech executive in Silicon Valley. She was working for one of those companies in Silicon Valley where it's hazy what they do, but we know they've eliminated a lot of jobs for a lot of people.
Yes.
And she felt guilty about that. So she decides to move home to run for Senate in PA, which in real life is a state that's never elected a woman to the Senate or to the governor, and they have an all-male delegation to Congress right now.
Wow.
And she's also married with 3 kids under the age of 6. And it's her story of going home, running for office. It was very important to me to have these 2 separate worlds of like the Silicon Valley Bay Area tech bubble with working class America. And that allowed me to kind of juxtapose what a lot of people call, you know, the elitist bubble on the coasts and in D.C. with the pain that real working class Americans are feeling right now. And that was such a huge issue during the last election. It's a huge issue this time that I wanted to reflect that. And it follows Charlotte through deciding to run and election night, and it has this ending that has people up in arms. I'm not going to say anything more about it, but they can email me and discuss it after they read it. I'm starting support groups across the country to help people get through it, and we can talk about it.
We can talk. Yeah.
I do want to say, so it's fascinating. I had this one part of the book that I took out because I'm trying to keep up with the news cycle, but this is a news cycle you can't keep up with as you're writing a novel.
Right.
And in it, Charlotte has a toddler, a 2-year-old, and we were talking about her possibly breastfeeding in a campaign ad. And my editor was like, that's crazy. No one will believe a candidate would do that. And then your very own Calderoy did, but our book had already got to print.
Oh, that's too bad.
But we can get it on the TV show. And then hopefully we can get Kelda on in a cameo.
There you go. She'd love that. She'd love that. So you can relate to San Francisco area, Silicon Valley, and Pennsylvania because you've lived in both places, right?
I have.
And did that help you tremendously?
It did. It did. I mean, as an author, I'm always struggling with how can I make the characters, but then also the setting feel authentic. And so there was no question that I was going to write Pennsylvania. I mean, also because it is such a difficult state for a woman to run in. I've also actually written Wisconsin into several books because my husband is from there.
Yes. I was wondering why I didn't put in, you know, add Milwaukee or Wisconsin in there.
Exactly. So, yeah, and I've been living in the Bay Area for the past 3 years. I'm kind of this fish out of water over there because, you know, I was born in the Midwest in Iowa and then raised on the East Coast, and I'm still getting used to California and Silicon Valley. So it was easy for me to write both of those worlds. And also, I have this one scene where Charlotte goes home and all the men home to California, and all the men in Silicon Valley are talking about how they're investing in venture cap to extend life indefinitely. And Charlotte's like, you know what? My neighbors back in Pennsylvania can't pay 1 medical bill.
Yeah.
And these men want to live forever.
Yeah.
And that's my favorite scene, juxtaposing these 2 worlds. And talking about that, because I don't think we talk enough about how these 2 worlds will, they just don't mix.
No. And when you said juxtaposing, it's so true. I mean, because you have a black and a white. We're not talking about shades of gray here. It's black and white. So you can see that difference so clearly. We've got Deb in La Crosse on the line, who actually has something to add to the conversation for us. Hey, Deb.
Hi there. Thanks for adding me to this conversation. I ran for state office 18 years ago. Did not win, thank goodness, because I would not be a good politician after all. But when I was interviewed by a radio program one day, they asked the question. They said, well, you have a daughter that's in school, 12 years old. So how are you going to be a parent and have a child that's in school and you're going to be down in Madison? And I paused for a second, and I responded, and I said, well, I find this question very interesting because when my husband became a firefighter working a 24-hour shift, nobody ever asked him that question.
No, they sure didn't.
That was my answer, and that was the end of that conversation. It just was appalling. They would never ask a male that question that was running for office.
Right.
No, they wouldn't. And so I've been doing panels with women candidates instead of book events because I find book events generally boring. No one needs to hear me blather on for right now. And I had one candidate who was running for office as a delegate in Virginia, and she got pregnant with twins.
Oh.
And they decided not to announce, because they're like, no one wants to see a pregnant woman on the campaign trail. Voters are going to think you're weak. Whereas if a man's wife gets pregnant and he's the one running for office, everyone's like, parade that pregnant woman out there. This is going to soften you up. You're a dad now.
That is just crazy.
It's incredible. Yeah. It's really incredible. And the questions women get asked, just like you, are completely different. Every woman candidate gets asked, well, who's taking care of your children? And I got asked that when I went to, I took some time away from my newborn. He was 3 months old to finish my novel. And someone's like, who's taking care of Charlie? And I'm like, his dad, he has two parents.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, Deb, thanks so much for calling in and sharing that with us. Now, what actual kind of research did you do to, you know, make this woman that you've created three-dimensional?
Well, I'm a journalist. I've been a journalist for, God, nearly 20 years. And I'm so used to writing nonfiction that I approached this book as if it were nonfiction. I interviewed more than 100 women who had run for office or who had worked as operatives behind the scenes, and a couple of men. In fact, a couple of men who had run campaigns in Pennsylvania for, you know, what is considered in the book, the other side. So I could try to make all of the candidates very three-dimensional. And there's this one part in the book where we actually list all of the insults that Charlotte Walsh gets called on Twitter. And most of them are things we would never say on the radio, so I'm not even going to list them.
No, they're nasty.
Mm-hmm. They're terrible, terrible things. They're all real insults that candidates, female candidates, have been called.
I wondered about that.
Social media. And I've been reading them at book events for the past couple of days, and the crowd goes silent. They're like, I can't believe someone would call someone that. And I'm like, these are all real. And Christina Reynolds from Emily's List has been on these panels with me, and she said, our candidates that we work with, they get worse on a daily basis.
It just is amazing to me that women are still running after having to put up with just even that. I mean, there's so much more.
Even that, you know, but more women than ever. And that's the inspiring part.
Mm-hmm.
So even the book only came out on Tuesday, and yet I've gotten hundreds of emails from women saying, I'm running for the first time. I want to run next year. Who can I connect with? How can I do this? And this is incredible because I think there was a worry after the last election that some women would say, well, Hillary Clinton didn't run. Maybe I can't run. Maybe a woman can't run for president, can't run for office. And the opposite has happened.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen more women galvanized than ever. And we don't need to elect women just because they're women. I mean, a woman candidate can be, you know, not a great candidate as well, as easily as a man can. But we need women in office for the diversity, to have mothers who understand the problems mothers are going through, to have caretakers, to have women who have faced the obstacles just being women in the workforce. And that's why we should support women. I get a lot of men asking, well, just because she's a woman, I shouldn't vote for her. And I'm like, no, absolutely not. But you should absolutely consider her positions.
Sure. Just diversity, like you said, that's a really good point. That's the whole point of democracy, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, we're talking about what it's like for a woman to run for office with Joe Piazza. Her new book about women in politics is called Charlotte Walsh Likes to Win, a novel. Are women candidates treated differently than men? What do you think? We'd like to hear from you. Our number is 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Jill Nadeau, filling in for Larry Mueller. Stay with us because we'll be right back after this news update from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry today on the Ideas Network. We're talking to Joe Piazza about her new novel, Charlotte Walsh Likes to Win. Joe is an award-winning journalist, editor, and author of a number of books, including The Knockoff and How to Be Married. We're talking about what it's like to be a woman running for office. Do you think that the media treats women candidates differently than men? Are you a man who has run against a woman? What was that experience like? Or are you thinking about running for office, but you just don't know if you should or not? We'd like to hear from you. Join the conversation. You need to call 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Joe, you're actually going to be in our area fairly soon, aren't you?
I am indeed. Like I said, my husband is from Milwaukee, so we are heading to Boswell's. I'm doing a book tour through the middle of the country, but we're doing it as a road trip, and I'm doing it with my friend and fellow author, Glynis McNichol, who wrote a memoir, but it's a memoir that ties in a lot with this subject. It's about a woman who's turning 40 and isn't married and doesn't have kids, and how do you describe the narrative of your life when the narrative of your life is completely different than what everyone expects it to look like. So Glynis and I are doing this lady power road trip in the middle of the country and culminating at Boswell's, or Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee on Friday, August 3rd.
Okay. What time will you be there? Do you know?
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock. So it's an evening.
It's an evening event, and there will be wine and snacks, and I'll probably be balancing my baby the entire time on my lap, because that's just how modern women do it.
That's right.
Days.
That's right. And you also, I mean, we have people listening in Illinois and Minnesota. So on Thursday, August 2nd, you're going to be at Anderson's in Chicago, correct?
I will. Yeah.
And then the following Saturday, then August 4th, you're going to be at Common Good Books in St. Paul.
In St. Paul, yeah, with the wonderful Nora McInerney of the podcast Terrible Things for Asking.
Ah,
so
interesting.
We're very excited to be in conversation with her at Common Good.
Yeah, well, come on out and say hi to Joe and get yourself a book and get it autographed, right?
Yeah. We sign books, we kiss books, we take pictures of books. We do all of the things with all of the books.
Okay. Now, in your book, let's talk about the book. Do you consider the media to be the antagonist in this book?
I do.
Okay.
I do. And I feel very comfortable saying that because I am the media.
Right.
And I've been the media, and I've been covering campaigns for a very long time. I'm in an interesting position as a journalist because I've covered both politics and entertainment at the same time and watched as politics has been turned into entertainment. I think that we are at a very difficult place right now where the media is just searching for clicks.
Yes.
And they're not covering candidates in a nuanced way. It's not doing favors to any voters. They're just looking for the next screaming headline, as opposed to helping voters figure out who to elect to best represent them. And it's a threat to democracy. It really is.
Do you have any ideas of how that can be changed?
And I think that the press needs to worry less about these tabloid style. And it's funny when I say tabloid style, because I cut my teeth as a reporter for the New York Daily News. I wrote tabloid headlines. I love tabloid headlines. Give me a good newspaper cover that says headless body in topless bar, and I'll be laughing all the way to bang.
Classic.
But that's just, it's not how we should be covering politics. I wrote something into the book when Charlotte decides to wear flats to an event. She's very tall. She has size 11 feet. She has three children. She doesn't want to wear heels. And it ends up being covered by the press as hashtag heelgate. And this is another thing that my editors were like, that's too crazy. The press would never do this. And then we see it all the time.
Oh, yeah.
We saw Melania Trump criticized for what shoes she wore to hurricane relief. Just last week we saw headlines talking about Queen Elizabeth and brooch warfare. The press needs to focus less on fashion and less on hair and less on makeup and more on the issues. And I think every journalist needs to, before they write a story, think, would I cover a man this way? And if the answer is no, don't do it.
Right. Now, I've noticed even when press conferences or something is streamed live and you can see all the comments that people are making, 9 times out of 10, there's comments about the woman's appearance, if it's a woman. And a lot of these times, it's a woman who's making these comments.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the things that we have seen a lot, that candidates have seen a lot, is that women are harsher on women than men ever would be. It's not men. And women journalists are harder on women. And I don't give myself a pass at all. I know I used to do stories. I did one story for the New York Daily News when Hillary Clinton wore a scrunchie, and I hate myself for it now. But I don't think I knew any better. I don't think that I was thinking about it. I just knew that it would get a lot of attention.
Sure.
And that was the wrong point of view to have. And I think hindsight is obviously 20/20. But it is the women journalists that are criticizing the women. I've been in the scrum of political journalists before, listening to a woman candidate, and the women will say, you know, she's shouting at me, or she sounds so shrill. And Christina Reynolds from Emily's List said she heard the same thing. And they would never say that about a man, even though both Bernie and Donald Trump, you know, shouted their entire campaigns. In fact, I mean, they literally shouted. Or it's just something about her voice that bothers me. Women are really harsh on other women, and that has to change.
Right. Now, when you decided to build this character of Charlotte, did she come fully formed, or did you base her on some of the people that you had actually talked to or knew?
She didn't come fully formed at all. Charlotte came to me essentially just as the name, and this is an interesting story, too. I talked to a ton of pollsters, and pollsters can tell you everything you need to know, whether or not it's true, but they think they know everything about the perfect candidate. And one of the things they told me with women candidates is that women candidates with two syllables in their first name do better than women candidates without two syllables in their first name. Three is too much, one is too little, I needed two syllables. So I created Charlotte Walsh. And then I let my interviews with other women inform her and create her dialogue and craft her mannerisms. And I just let her grow. I usually let characters grow in my head and I create them. And I let Charlotte be created by the women who are actually running for office.
Okay. Now, and you know, she's certainly not perfect. And I will say that there's a few times when I was really frustrated what she was doing.
I know.
Did you like Charlotte?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Sometimes I do like Charlotte, and sometimes I can't stand Charlotte, and sometimes I'm wildly frustrated by the things that she does. And that was very important to me, too, because it would have been very easy to essentially write fan fiction.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
To say, women candidates are the best. We should all elect women. And this is my fan fiction do-over of the 2016 election. There's nothing wrong with my candidate. And that's not true. No candidate is flawless. Charlotte is very flawed. She's an ambitious woman. She's a brilliant woman. She has a lot of imposter syndrome. I think like a lot of women, she feels kind of like a failure.
Mm-hmm.
Every day, most successful women that I know do. She's trying her best, but her best doesn't always work. And she makes some very, very questionable decisions. And her flaws, I think, are what make her human. And going back to the end of the book, what I wanted to create was a conversation around, should Charlotte win? She wants to win. She's certainly competent. But given everything that she does in the book, should she win? And again, I don't think we should elect women to office just because they're women.
Mm-hmm.
We should elect the right women to office. And that's the conversation I wanted to start around Charlotte Walsh.
Now, let's talk a little bit about Charlotte's husband, Max. How did you want him to come across?
It's interesting because in the very beginning of the creation of this book, one of the original title ideas for the book that my publisher was batting around was The Candidate's Husband.
Oh.
Titles like that do very well. I mean, we all know The Woman in the Window, The Girl on the Train,
mm-hmm.
The Banker's Wife. And they wanted to talk about what is it like for a man to have his wife running for office, a man that could possibly be the first lady. And I nixed that immediately. I was like, absolutely not. First off, we're putting the candidate's name in this title. And second off, we're going to say that she likes to win, because that feels subversive for a woman to say, I like to win.
Mm-hmm.
But Max is a complicated character. He's also a tech executive. He's supportive of his wife, but maybe not supportive enough. And I think he reflects a lot of men that are married to ambitious women these days, where they don't know what their role looks like anymore. And they're struggling to figure out who they are, what they want to do. He takes the time off to be the caretaker for their three young children because, and this is something else I heard from candidates, a woman candidate, it's not a good look for her to have a nanny on the campaign trail.
Right.
And I hear that over and over. And then I'm like, well, who is supposed to be doing this work? Because candidates are also usually working full-time jobs.
Sure.
Someone has to support the family, and then someone has to take care of the children if they're young. That's why we haven't seen many women with young children running before. But so she gets rid of her nanny, and Max is taking care of their kids. And he's really kind of a burr in her side for a lot of the campaign, because even though he starts out wanting to be helpful, he's very resentful of this position. He's very resentful of having to move back to Pennsylvania. He's resentful of having to have his entire family exposed to the press scrutiny. And that's another reason that women don't run. Women are very protective of their families. And to open up your family, to make your family so vulnerable, to have your children attacked, your children scrutinized, it's something that most women won't stand for.
Definitely true. We're talking about women running for office with Jo Piazza. She's an award-winning journalist, editor, and author. Her new book is called Charlotte Walsh Likes to Win, a novel. Have you thought about running for office? Well, we'd like to hear from you. What's your opinion on this? Our number, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. I thought your description of how Charlotte reacted to Max's infidelity and then to the possibility of another affair was just dead on. How difficult was that for you to write?
It was tough. It was, because I'm relatively newly married. I've been married now for 3 years. And so to write about a marriage in such turmoil, to write about infidelity, made me channel so many fears about my own marriage. And also, I wrote about this in How to Be Married. I watched those things play out in my parents' marriage, and I talked to my mom a lot about it, about how can I craft this situation where Charlotte finds out that Max has been unfaithful. And my mom was very helpful. She'd had some experience with that in her life, and I'm so grateful to her for opening up to me about that. But that was also very important to me, because we see so many stories about infidelity on the campaign trail. They're often written off. I personally covered John Edwards. I covered the Elliot Spitzer story. I have watched as women have stood by their husbands and lied for them and covered up their infidelities. And even though it is Max who's unfaithful, it's still Charlotte who's running mm-hmm. in this story. And it's Max who has to kind of take the fall for that. He has to play that role that we saw Zilda Spitzer and Elizabeth Edwards playing, of standing next to the candidate and looking pretty and supporting them. And that's a difficult position for a man to be in. So it was important to me. I also, as I was thinking about writing a political novel, I just kept thinking about the Anthony Weiner story. And thinking, originally we were planning on novelizing something about that, but you just can't write fiction better than that reality. So let's let that story be.
Sure.
And wanted to think about what is it like for an infidelity, an affair, to play out in the public eye, and how much worse that betrayal is when everyone is commenting mm-hmm. on that betrayal and everyone is judging you.
Right. I can't imagine how difficult that would be, but certainly has happened to a number of people. What kind of personality does it take, do you think, to run for office? And is it different for men and women?
It's absolutely different for men and women. I think with men, and not all male candidates, again, I don't want to stereotype or shoehorn male candidates, but for a long time there has been a lot of ego involved. And we've seen a lot of stock political candidates for most of American history who all look the same, because it also takes a certain amount of money and success, a professional success, mm-hmm. to run for office, or has historically. So that's why we have a lot of politicians who all look like each other. And with women candidates, especially the ones that I'm talking to, women candidates seem to be running today to fix things. They see a problem, they want to fix it. And it starts at a grassroots level, usually. It's usually they see a problem in their community. They're like, you know what, public transportation is really bad here. I can't get my kids to school, or I can't get to work. I'd like to run to fix that. Or I'd like to fix Medicaid because my mother, who has a chronic disease, is about to be kicked off the Medicaid rolls. I'm going to fix that. And that was a big thing for me with Charlotte. Charlotte is known as, quote-unquote, the fixer. She likes to fix problems. And that's a big part of the personality for a lot of women that are running for office. They want to... Women get things done. And that's one of the T-shirts I want to make for the book, ladies. We just get it done. Yes. We just do it.
Just do it. Just do it. Now, even Charlotte has a book that she wrote that's called Let's Fix It. Was that the reason why you called it that?
It is. Yeah. It is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And Charlotte is the COO of a tech company, but she's not the CEO. The CEO is two men. But she's a woman that's used to supporting men. And I think it's also very hard for her to be a woman that is then supporting herself and touting herself. And I try to show her on the campaign trail how it's difficult for her to boast and to brag about herself. And I hear that from women candidates all the time, too. In fact, and this is astounding, I didn't know this before I wrote the book, women candidates have a harder time fundraising than men. They just do. Their campaign manager will tell them that right up front. They're like, you are going to have a much harder time getting people to give you money. And part of it is because women don't like to brag about themselves.
Yes.
And male candidates will brag and brag all day long, and it makes people feel that they're very competent. But women candidates tend to be more humble. And they're told they should be humble. They're also told that bragging's not a good look for a woman. Maybe you should be a little careful. So it's such a double-edged sword.
Yes, I think we've all heard that as we were growing up and into adulthood. For sure. Do you think that some of the younger women that are coming up are going to be different in that regard?
I do. I absolutely do. Part of writing this book and wanting it to be turned into a TV show is I think we have a lot of deprogramming to do from what culture has told us young women can be and can do. I think that young women today are a lot more outspoken. They've seen women role models before. Even in a way, I'm 38, that my generation didn't get to see. And the young women who are coming to these book events and who have read the book just in the past few days and are emailing me are saying, you know, I like Charlotte, but I'm not as scared as she is. I don't have her fear. And I'm hoping that that is universal, that these women have less fear about putting themselves out there and bragging about themselves and running for office.
You had mentioned earlier about, you know, relationships and women kind of protecting their families. There was a quote in the book that Charlotte's friend Roz says, in that no one can judge someone else's relationships. It's all too complicated. Human beings are too complicated. But for some reason, we need our politicians to be simple and neat, particularly our women. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's true. And it's something that I've learned too, especially I was writing that book, How to Be Married, and everyone wants to judge everyone else's relationship. But we like for our politicians to have this very neatly packaged narrative. You're playing a role. You're a wife, you're a husband, you're a mother, and all of that is very neat, and we don't want it to be messy. But that's not reality. We're all flawed. Our lives are all messy. Another thing that I keep seeing is that I think that women can be and want to be more authentic on the campaign trail. For years, politicians have been told to hide the messy parts about their family, whether that's a family member dealing with addiction, which is something we talk about in Charlotte Walsh, or perhaps having a child who is on the spectrum. They're like, you know, push that away. Don't let voters see that. And the panel that I did down in D.C., Tally Sargent, who's running in West Virginia, was on there, and she talks so openly about her sister's addiction. That's something that most male candidates and most candidates for a long time would not do. Hala Ayala was on there, and she talks about her son being on the spectrum and trying to get health care for him. Again, something that would have been swept under the rug. I think that the women running this year are much more likely to talk about their own flaws, and that's relatable. I think voters actually want someone that's authentic. If Donald Trump has taught us anything, it's that we're sick of hearing politicians who sound like politicians. And I think that is a good thing, that people can finally start to talk more off the cuff, because our politicians are humans. They should just be our representatives. They shouldn't be stock political character.
Right. Now, you took... You said that these women candidates are talking more about themselves. Do you think that has rubbed off then on the male candidates in those races also?
I do. I think that candidates for so long have been told that they have to have these stock speeches. And now when the men see the women opening up more and more, they're now more likely to start to tell some of their personal stories. And when that happens, everyone wins. The voters win, because then we get to know someone as a human, and all you really want to do is elect a human, whether that is a man or a woman.
Right. We did have Kristen email us, and she says that when women run as candidates, the media always discusses their families and children, but when men run, it's not a frequent discussion point. She said she noticed this when recent candidates were introduced for the Supreme Court justices.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's not. For a man, the family is just kind of a bonus, right? It's mm-hmm. like sometimes you'll see them in pictures, sometimes you won't. It makes, and in fact, campaign operatives will say, your family will make you softer, so why don't we put your family on more mailers?
Right.
Whereas for a woman candidate, they're like, don't put your kids on there, don't put your husband on there, let's put you in a strong pose. Let's put you in a thinking pose, like Rodin's sculpture. The people want to yes. think about your thinking, but we don't want to think that you're going home and making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. But then the flip side of that is that women are constantly asked about who's taking care of their kids. A woman candidate running for governor in California said people asked her every single day, what does your husband think about that position?
What
does your husband think about that policy? And she was like, my husband is not running for office. Why do you even care? A male candidate will never, ever be asked that. And he'll never be asked how his children are being taken care of. Male candidates can have nannies, can have babysitters right there in their campaign pictures, and no one will bat an eye.
Okay. Well, Joe, actually, you know, I'm going to have to stop you there because we're just about out of time.
Oh, no.
Good luck with the book.
Thank you so much.
You bet. We've been talking with Joe Piazza about her new novel, Charlotte Walsh Likes to Win. She'll be in Milwaukee on Friday, August 3rd at Boswell Book Company. You can find out more at joepiazza.com. Thanks to Kate Archer-Kent for her on-air production and to Dave Potras for technical direction. I'm Jill Nadeau, filling in for Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Hope you enjoy the rest of your day. Stay with us. There's more to come.